But up next, this hour, winter. You know, it's a great time of the year to check out the night sky because, you know, the cold, crisp air is very clear. There's a lot to see. You can see a lot more. And you may not see the Star of Bethlehem, but you might catch just a glimpse of your favorite winter constellation. And in March, there's going to be a total eclipse of the moon. And you don't have to wait that long to see something because this Sunday, early Sunday morning, a rare planetary trio is scheduled to make an appearance. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to get a winter stargazing guide from our favorite meteorologist by day, amateur astronomer by night, and he'll help answer one of the questions we get most of the time, most often about gift-giving this time of the year, and that is, how do you buy a telescope? You know, there's a lot of hype in the magazines. What should you do if you want to buy a telescope? What do I need to know? So if you'd like to join our discussion, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Joe Rayo is the Space.com night sky columnist, the Sky Watch contributor to the New York Times, an associate and guest lecturer at the Hayden Planetarium at the Rose Center for Earth and Space. He's also a meteorologist at Cablevision News 12 Network of Greater New York in Westchester. He joins us today from his office there. Welcome back to the program, Joe.
How you doing, Ira? It's nice to be chatting with you again.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from you. Give us an idea of the sky showing up as we speak. I mentioned a planet trio in the same part of the sky. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. There are three planets right now that are visible in the early morning sky just before sunup over in the east-southeast. They are Mercury, the planet Jupiter, and the planet Mars. And these three planets are going to be, already they're fairly close together, but on Sunday morning they're going to cluster to within about a degree of each other in the sky, making kind of like a tiny arrowhead, if you will, with Mars at the arrow point. And if you want to get an idea of just how tight this is, 1 degree, keep in mind that the moon, the full moon, or the sun, but you don't want to look at the sun, but basically the same size, the moon is about a half degree in diameter. So we're talking about three planets clustered into a very tight little spot in the sky, into an area that's roughly about twice the moon's width. And again, they'll be low down in the east-southeastern sky. Oh, the best time to look probably be about a half hour to three-quarters of an hour before the sun comes up. Anytime over the next few mornings, but the morning when they'll be closest together will be early on Sunday morning.
So if you're heading back from that late night holiday shopping over the weekend.
Well, the only drawback about this cluster, it would be more spectacular if we had three, or if all three planets were close to equal brightness, but Jupiter will shine the brightest. Mercury won't be quite as bright, but that should also be quite evident. The only problem planet is Mars. Mars right now, at this point in time, is on the other side of the sun, or the other side of the solar system from us. It's rather dim. It might not be visible with the unaided eye. You may need a pair of binoculars to pick it out, along with the two other planets. Far, far from the Earth now. Interestingly, Mars is beginning to make the turnaround, so to speak. It's, as I said, it's on the opposite side of the sun from us. Next year at this time, 1 year from now, Mars will be near what we call opposition, and it will shine brilliantly. But it's going to be a long, slow climb up between now and then for it to get bright. And again, right now it's kind of dim, and you'll probably need Mercury and Jupiter to help find it early in the morning hours. But it's still kind of interesting that three planets are all, you know, bunched together in such a small spot in the sky.
Do you need a telescope to see them, or can you just go out and take a look?
No, Jupiter and Mercury, Jupiter especially, should be readily evident as a fairly bright star on the just above the east-southeast horizon. Once you pick that out, you should have no problem in also discerning or picking out Mercury, which will be close by. Mercury won't be quite as bright. But Mars, I wouldn't suggest trying to use a telescope, only because a telescope, it kind of restricts your view, so to speak.
Right.
Binoculars, however, which I always suggest to people, are probably the best instrument that you can use. You can readily, once you get Jupiter in view, just train your binoculars on Jupiter, and immediately you'll pick out Mercury, and Mars should be also evident as well.
Well, let me go. Let me continue in our chronological order of things. Isn't there a night launch of the space shuttle scheduled one of these days when the weather cooperates?
Right. Well, the shuttle, of course, was supposed to shuttle Discovery was supposed to go off last night, and of course they had low clouds at Cape Canaveral, and that precluded getting the vehicle off. They are tentatively set to try again tomorrow evening, I think something like 8:50 p.m. Eastern time. And folks who are located along the eastern seaboard, since this is a night launch, the shuttle track is going to be pretty much parallel to the East Coast. So if you're anywhere from Florida all the way up to southern New England, you'll be able to get a glimpse of the shuttle as it's boring into orbit. Folks down in the southeastern states will obviously have the best view because they're closer in, and especially within 500 miles of Cape Canaveral, you can't miss it because of those brilliant solid rocket boosters, which bolster the shuttle for the first couple of minutes of powered flight. But then after the solid rocket boosters are let go or jettisoned, the shuttle continues with the three main engines on the vehicle. And by virtue of those three main engines, you can see it as kind of a pulsating yellowish-orange star-like object moving very rapidly across your line of sight. And the folks generally from the mid-Atlantic and northeastern states will be able to see that, depending upon where you are, low to the horizon, traveling from the south or south-southeast over to the east. You should be able to get a good view of that for about a minute or so. When they shut those main engines down about 8.5 minutes after launch, that'll be about 400 miles southeast of New York City. So just keep your eye on the sky, low toward the southeastern part of the sky, and you should get at least a glimpse of it if indeed whenever they NASA gets it off.
Yeah, just watch or listen on the radio or TV for the launch and go run outside and hope
that's absolutely correct. I mean, don't just assume by the time that you've read the newspaper that the shuttle is going off. Obviously, last night they didn't. But as soon as you watch it or listen to it on your local radio station, go outside and, again, depending upon where you are, how far up the coast you are, folks like in New England and New York City may have to wait 7 or 8 minutes after the launch, but further south, closer into the Cape, it may not be quite as long. Remember that when they shut those main engines off 8.5 minutes after liftoff, the thing is already moving. It's like 17,000 miles an hour, so it's going to be moving fairly quick.
Yeah. Let's talk about the annual winter meteor showers we have. We had the Leonids last month, but now we have the Geminids.
I love the Geminids. The Geminids don't get I wish I could find somebody to be the public relations agent for the Geminid meteor shower. Everybody talks about the Leonids. Everybody talks about the August Perseids. Of course, the Perseids are, you know, come at a time of the year when everybody is out vacationing. People discover, who never look at the nighttime sky, discover on their own while camping or just looking up on a summer's night, meteors coming out of the northeastern part of the sky. It's easy to do stargazing in August because it's so mild. And, you know, again, a lot of people normally are out and away from bright city lights. The Geminid meteor shower is every bit as good, if not perhaps even better, than the Perseid meteor shower. But the problem with the Geminids, of course, is they come in the middle of December when it's much, much colder. And it's very tough to, you know, lie out on your back or just even stay out for a long interval of time to watch shooting stars. But if you can bundle up against the cold and are out and about this coming Wednesday night into the wee hours of Thursday morning when the peak of the Geminid shower occurs, you could, if you have a nice dark area free from any bright lights, see as many as 1 to 2 meteors per minute. We're talking about 60 to maybe as many as 120 per hour.
Wow.
And they're of all varying degrees of brightness. And unlike the Perseids and the Leonids, which zip through our atmosphere at speeds upwards to 40 miles per second, the Geminids move about half as swift. So unlike the swift, bright streaks that you see with the Leonids, they go like that, the Geminids move slower and more majestically across the sky. They almost look like the balls that are shot out of a Roman candle. And they are very, very spectacular. The brightest ones, again, move majestically across the sky. In fact, David Levy, the co-discoverer of the famous Shoemaker-Levy comet, once made the comment about the Geminids. He said, if you have not seen a Geminid fireball arcing majestically across your nighttime sky, you haven't seen a meteor. So
wow.
If you're out and about the middle or latter part of this week, and if it's clear where you are, especially Wednesday night and Thursday night, those are the two best nights. Take a look. Anytime after 9 or 10 o'clock, you certainly should be able to see a few of these bright meteors emanating from the constellation of Gemini, and that's why, of course, we call them Geminid meteors.
Which part of the sky would that be? Which direction?
Gemini comes up in the east-northeast along about 7, 8, 9 o'clock, and by the time you get to 2 a.m., if you can stick it out that long, Gemini will be square overhead. I mean, how easy is that? Just lie back and look straight up and watch them as they come out of the heavenly twins.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's talk a little bit about how to view through a pair of binoculars or telescope. People this year, holiday season, they're looking to buy a telescope. How do you shop for one? What should you not make a mistake doing?
You know, this is the time of the year, and I get a lot of phone calls, not from mom or dad. I get them from great uncles and aunts, grandparents, all of whom are thinking about buying or purchasing a telescope. And you've seen the ads in newspapers and catalogs. I mean, a typical ad says something like, bring the mysteries of the universe up close for your inspection. Study the stars, comets, much, much more with this practical learning tool.
Yeah, and you 500 get people, powers.
Yeah. I mean, you get people who there are two kinds of people. They drop a lot of money, some folks, especially the grandparents. I spoke to one lady not too long ago who said she was planning to buy a telescope for her grandchild and wanted to make sure that the telescope that she was buying was a good instrument. She told me what it was, and indeed it was one of the top-of-the-line telescopes. And then I asked the question, I said, how old is your grandchild? And she said, he's going to be 7 next month. And I said, wait a minute, let's slow down a little bit. If you're going to purchase a telescope, first of all, if you're purchasing it for a youngster, my suggestion is back up a little bit, and before you go out and buy a telescope, maybe get the child a pair of binoculars. And that may sound like a come-down, but binoculars are very, very nice. They're eminently portable. You can see a lot through binoculars. You can see craters on the moon. If you hold them steady enough, you
right.
might
What
be
power? What,
seven,
what,
you can use seven
what
power.
Numbers?
Seven, the so-called night glasses are 7x50. The 7x is the power, 7 power. 50 is the size in millimeter of the objective lens, the big lenses that you see on the side
right.
of the instrument from what right. you're looking through in the eyepiece. I prefer 7x35, actually, binoculars, because those kind of binoculars are generally wide angle, and you get to see a little bit more with wide angle views. But they're relatively easy to use. They're relatively inexpensive. They're helpful in learning the constellations and getting acquainted with many attractive deep sky objects. When held steadily, as I said, you can see the craters on the moon, the crescent of Venus, mm-hmm. the moons of Jupiter. Just on a summer's night, when you're looking at the Milky Way, you'll see more stars than you think you could ever count. But if the youngster starts off with binoculars, and if he or she sticks with it after a year or two, then you bounce them up to a telescope. And don't go out and get one of these telescopes that, you know, there's some. I spoke to a lady recently that got a telescope, and she figured that the motorized clock drive was going to help her find everything and anything. There are telescopes out there that will help you do that. Go-to telescopes where you can program it, but you have to know a little bit about astronomy. You have to know a little bit about right ascension and declination. You're not going to go out and buy a whole set of expensive pots and pans and expect immediately to become Emeril Lagasse. You need to develop a little bit of a knowledge of astronomy and the stars before you go out and buy that big instrument.
Hey, Angela, let me remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Joe Rayo about buying a telescope. So you decide you want to buy the telescope. Can you give us what power or what kind of scope you would recommend for someone who's got some experience now?
Well, you just mentioned the magic word, power. You have to be wary of power. One of the things that's always promised is incredibly high power, especially in these department store telescopes.
Right.
I mean, any telescope can provide you with 500 power magnification, but that's well beyond, I should say, the practical maximum magnification of most telescopes. And what you get when you see 500 power is a big, blurry image. What you should do is if you know the aperture of the telescope. Let's say the telescope is a 4-inch telescope. Remember the rule, 50 power per inch. So with a 4-inch telescope, the maximum you should be using is 200 power. And generally, you shouldn't even go to the maximum. You should use half the maximum. So the best views in a 4-inch telescope would be on the order of about 100 power. And you get a lot of good views with a 100-power telescope. And another problem is the mounting of the telescope. A lot of off-the-shelf instruments are usually lightweight and very unstable, and especially like here in the New York metropolitan area last night, where it was very clear but very cold and windy, you bring a telescope out that has a very unstable mount, and you're not going to see anything, regardless
right.
of how good the
right.
optics are.
So spend some money on a good mount.
You need a telescope, a good quality telescope with a good optical history, and also with a good, solid, sturdy mount. And before you start thumbing through your local department store catalogs for such a telescope, I would suggest going down to your local bookstore and picking up a copy of one of the popular journals in astronomy, such as Sky and Telescope, or maybe a brand new magazine which has been out for the last couple of years called Night Sky Magazine, which is good for the neophyte, the astronomy mm-hmm. neophyte, or Astronomy Magazine, which is published out in the Midwest. Right. Any one of those three magazines will contain a lot of information, usually each month, on how to observe the sky and also what telescope that you can get and a lot of advertisements of reputable firms.
Or join a club or go online where there are telescope clubs and talk to people about that.
Absolutely. There's always a telescope astronomy club in most larger cities, and I'm sure that if you went to Google and Googled astronomy clubs and tagged on what city you happen to be located in, you after a small search will probably find some planetarium, observatory, or astronomy club near to you with people who are interested in the sky and can actually help you out.
All right, Joe. I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us. Are you going to be out there watching?
I'll be watching all the time, and very quickly, you mentioned that eclipse, Ira.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, get to that.
That'll be at the tail end of the winter season. That's on Saturday night, March the 3rd, and what's interesting about that total eclipse of the moon, in the eastern United States, the moon will rise already completely immersed in the shadow of the Earth. It'll rise in total eclipse. You folks who are listening in the middle part of the nation will be able to watch the moon emerge from the shadow as the moon is rising, and for the folks out west, sorry, that eclipse may be all but over by the time the moon comes up where you are, but you'll get out of the crack because this is a two eclipse here coming up in 2007. Another total eclipse of the moon will be occurring in the late summer on the 28th of August. So if you miss out on the first one on March 3rd because of weather conditions, you still got another crack later on in the year on August the 28th.
Once in a blue moon, we have a red moon. All right, Joe, thanks a lot for taking time to be with us today.
No problem, Ira. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
You too. Good viewing to you. Joe Rayo is space.com night sky columnist, the Skywatch contributor to the New York Times, and associate and guest lecturer at the Hayden Planetarium at the Rose Center for Earth and Space. He's also a meteorologist for the Cablevision News 12 network of Greater New York and Westchester, and we always enjoy having Joe Rayo tell us what to watch in the sky. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. Our audio engineer is Manoli Wetherill in New York and Linda Mack in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Also, Setsuko Sato worked the phones for us today. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have free teaching materials. Press on the teacher's button. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection, that's what we call it. And you can podcast, and we're blogging there, and also something new. You can join our Facebook community, and then you can also go over to squidoo.com, squidoo.com, and share your knowledge with everybody else. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.